Trade evenings for Continental Tyres. When you need tyres, ask for Continental. Continental-tyres.com.au.
Very good evening. Welcome to Trade Evenings, Continental Tyres, who we do it all for. When you need tyres, ask for Continental, continental-tyres.com.au. So at this time every night during Trade Radio for the next 2.5 weeks, we're going to take you through the day chronologically through all our shows and the big discussion points from each of them. And I'd love to hear from you on the Kogan Mobile open line, 1300 23 55 48. Make the call and switch to Kogan Mobile today. You can text in at any stage, 0419 187 323. Now, write those numbers down, because if you're normally used to listening to us on the regular number, the 7361, just write this one down for this hour every day between 7 and 8 for Trade Evenings. So 1300 23 55 48. Give that one a call, and you'll be able to get through to talk all things trade. And the text line, 0419 187 323. The Kogan Mobile open line is open and ready for business. Sam Hargraves with you. And we're going to start off today where we start off every day on Trade Radio, and that's at 7 a.m, the early trade with Kane Corns and Matty Lloyd. The highlights from each show and the major discussion points from it and the big stories of the day. And there's a couple of big ones to get through as well. We will discuss Pat Lipinski, his request to the Western Bulldogs to trade him to Collingwood. We'll get the expert's view on that. And I'd love your view on it too, as a Dogs fan or as a Collingwood fan. The big question is how they get that deal done, because Collingwood still don't have enough draft points yet to make sure they claim Nick Dacos from an early bid. So would it be picks? Would it be players? How to get that deal done? It puts your thinking caps on if you're a Dogs supporter or a Pies supporter or just a trade enthusiast. Just, I'm happy to hear from all of you. So the early trade today with Kane Corns and Matty Lloyd. Lloyd, he started talking about Essendon and St Kilda and how they might position themselves to have a crack at Ben King by positioning themselves in this year's draft.
Where I'm interested in, mine is a watch this space on what Essendon and St Kilda do in terms of picks for next season, because I think the Ben King key forward, Peter Wright and Aaron Francis were the key forwards in a final. Mm. And so many flaws were exposed in this year's final series. Like, it's amazing how so many teams were just found out badly. Like Geelong were through the midfield.
Port Adelaide
were exposed badly. Even Brisbane, they keep getting there. They get found out. Mm. Essendon in the first week of the finals, found out. And I think you couldn't expect to win a final with Aaron Francis and Peter Wright as your two key forwards. And so St Kilda think they've got him, Kane. That's the talk. They feel like they've had him and that they will get Ben King. That's the talk. But I just wonder whether you'll see Essendon try and get their picks forward for next season just so they're in that window, because he's the player that they are crying out for and could take them to the promised land.
Matty Lloyd, so what do Essendon and Kilda do this year to get themselves ready for next year to launch a bid for Ben King? And would he end up playing alongside his brother? Are they too similar, Saints fans? I mean, when you look at the importance of a key forward, and how many do you roll inside forward 50? Is it two? And then a mid-sized forward like a Bailey Fritch? Do they have to have different strings to their bow in terms of how they play that key forward role, like a Tom Hawkins and Jeremy Cameron scenario, like what Lance Franklin and Jared Roughead were for Hawthorn in that period, like what Jack Darling and Josh Kennedy are for the West Coast Eagles? So do you have two players who look very similar in the way they go about it? Is that going to be a great fit for St Kilda? 1300 23 55 48. Lloydie also talking about Sam Petrevski-Seaton and his criticism of him and what he needs to work on.
I wouldn't be too phased if I was Carlton, to be honest. He's another one that I've seen as a junior, and everything he did was good, but he didn't leave his area like that often. Like, in terms of, he'd work within a 50-metre, 60-metre radius, where you're watching Sam Walsh and he's running 150, 200 metres. So I look at, Soss spoke about him being a forward midfielder. I look at the forwards that play. You look at the way Waitman plays and Pickett plays and Tom Papley plays, and they're just dynamic, hard-working forwards. And then you look at the midfielders. Could you imagine Petrevski-Seaton going up against Petrarca and Olli. Mm. You look at the benchmarks and Bontempelli. I can see why Carlton, maybe he was messed around a little bit, but I can see why they settled him on a half-back flank, because you can sort of put him back there and they read the play, and it's sort of the easiest position probably to play on the ground. So yep. I don't think he competes hard enough, and I don't think he's looked as fit as what some AFL players have been. So I can understand why he leaves the club and he looks for greater opportunity. But unless he changes, from what I'm seeing from afar, I don't think it'll change from whichever club he goes to.
Matty Lloyd, speaking about Sam Petreski-Seaton, has requested a trade to the West Coast Eagles, and as a pick six in his draft year and where he's got to now in his career, what is he worth? And would you want to try and keep him? Stephen Silvani spoke this morning as well about the fact that if he was Carlton, he would look to keep Sam Petreski-Seaton, still believing that he has upside, also agreeing that he maybe doesn't work as hard as he could. But geez, if you can get what maybe a Michael Voss might be able to do with a sit-down chat with him, you never know. But it would look like he has his heart set going back to Western Australia, where he's from. He was playing waffle footy at about the age of 16, 17. And I can remember Cal Toomey saying at the time when he was taken at pick six that he might be the best midfielder in his draft year, which was really good praise from a guy that knows the draft as well as any. And what his upside might be, and have we seen his ceiling yet? We certainly haven't seen the best of him, and who and where would he get the best out of himself? It remains to be seen, but he is one of the big talking points of this trade period. Before we get to Lloydie's top five steals of the 2020 trade period, let's get to Jason in Doncaster. G'day, Jace.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, really well, thanks.
Good. Well, I've got a little bit of a, it's a bit fanciful, but I've got a little bit of a trade for you.
Please do.
So the rumour is that they've said no to Tom Mitchell getting traded, but the rumour is he's still on the table. So I don't know what he's worth, but I'd trade Tom Mitchell for Richmond's pick 7 and pick 28 and give them back two later picks in the draft. I would think that's what he's worth, personally. Then from there, that means Hawks have pick 21, 24, 28. Trade that to Collingwood's first rounder, meaning that Collingwood fulfill all the draft points this year to Dacos, keep it second rounder this year, keep it second rounder next year, and have draft capital to get Lipinski as well.
That's some good thought that's gone into that, Jace. I don't think Richmond would give pick 7 for Tom Mitchell, but they may give pick 15 and 26. And 15 and 26, which they've got. I mean, they've got a pretty healthy draft hand coming into this year, Richmond, which they haven't had for a fair while. At the moment, they've got pick 7, they've got pick 15, they've got pick 26 and pick 28. So I don't think they'd give 7 for him, but I wonder if they'd give 15 and 26 was the number, but whether Hawthorn would accept that, that's the other thing. From what we understand, Tom Mitchell was open to the idea of trade. Now he's keen to stay. I think if Hawthorn are going to better their draft hand, they have to look at trading players who have currency, and they just don't have a heap of them at the moment. So Tom Mitchell is one that has currency. So is Chad Wingard. So is Jaeger O'Meara. Jack Gunston, if he could get to another team in a premiership window, I'd be absolutely rapt for him to go and try and get another little cherry on the top of a fantastic career for him. And I don't think Hawthorn fans would begrudge him for it, because he's not going to win another flag in what's left of his career at Hawthorn. They're just too far away from that. So they do have to look at players like that to trade Hawthorn, and where would he be a fit? Richmond would be a decent fit, you'd think. Could Carlton be a fit? Would St Kilda be a fit? Who else would need? Would Port Adelaide be a fit, given that they were, and we heard from Lloydie a little earlier, who was caught short in the midfield lacking that depth? I mean, we've seen the premiership winner in Melbourne, their midfield, you know, they sort of bat through, they've got about six midfielders that they play in any one game, and Western Bulldogs are the same. So that might be the blueprint moving forward, that you just can't have that sort of four or five. You maybe got to look at six or seven. So, and where would he be a good fit, Tom Mitchell? But I certainly think that if Hawthorn get a decent offer, then they should absolutely entertain it. Great call. Lloydie's top five steals, before we come back with what Matty Pask had to say about players being traded against their will, his top five steals of the 2020 trade period.
Kane, I thought I'd look back on last year's trade period and the five winners in terms of not having to give up much, but they've improved their list.
Yeah.
You know, so you can be really creative here, and I just want to go back and revisit some deals where you go, oh, what a steal that was for not giving up much. So in number five, Kano, I've looked at the Tom Hickey deal. So he was brilliant for Sydney this year. He was the number one ruckman, and really they gave away not much at all. So Sydney got Hickey, pick 34 and 60. So, and then in return, West Coast got 58, 62, a future second and future third. So it's pretty much
got him for free.
Got him for free. So yeah. Pick five. So number five, the win, and he becomes the number one ruckman for your football club. Number four, I've got Nick Hind. So Hind, Essendon got Hind and pick 77, and the Saints got pick 67 and 74. So another one that they got for free, and you'd say nearly he had the season probably better than Adam Saad in a sense.
Yeah, so they've lost Saad, and they got what in the end they got a big price for Saad, and they've replaced him for nothing, and then used the pick for Saad to go to the draft and get a young player who's going to be there for 12 years.
Exactly, so a massive win. So just showing what you can potentially do in this area. Adam Chalor was probably in the best three for his club on grand final day, and we look at that one. They pretty much got him for a future second rounder. That's what the pick was for Adam Treloar. So the Doggies got Treloar, pick 26, pick 33, and pick 42. And the Pies got pick 14 in the future second rounder. So when you even it out, it was Adam Treloar for a future second rounder. So it was a fire sale in the end.
And I guess you factor in that Collingwood are paying $300,000 of his salary, so you get a player that's worth $600,000 to $700,000, and you're paying him a third of that, so you've got to factor that in as well.
Number two, he could easily be number one, Kane, is Alir Alir. So Alir Alir went for a future second rounder, and he was a All-Australian centre-half back. So what a great deal that was for the Port Adelaide Football Club, and not sure what went on, whether it was money, whether Sydney didn't see this in him, but an outstanding recruitment for Port Adelaide.
Yeah, no doubt. He was enormous for them and caused the opposition a lot of headaches to the point where, they tagged him in a prelim final and he didn't have the impact that he would have liked. I think the next progression for him is to really stand up in those big games or those high-pressure games against the best teams. A couple of occasions this year against the top four sides, his performance dropped off. But from where he had come from at Sydney, I think they mucked around with him a little bit at the Swans. They played him ruck. They played him forward. They'd never settled him in a position. It was a great deal for Port Adelaide, and that was one area they needed to bolster, and they did. And now they look to other areas like the midfield of how they're going to address their list this offseason.
Because, a future second round is like a lottery. Who knows? It's going to be around the 30s, 40s. You rarely get a 200-game player out of that. So, great deal. And I've got Ben Brown, Kane, at number one because he's a premiership player, obviously. He played 13 games for Melbourne this year. They were 11 wins, one draw, one loss. So he made a real difference to them. We asked Clayton Oliver on the Sunday Footy Show about who surprised you most. He said what Ben Brown did for us. He made us better by the time he came in. It's not the goals he kicks, because some will say he did. How much did he do? But he made them a better side. But that deal was North. So the Melbourne got Ben Brown, pick 28 and a future fourth. North got 26, 33 and a future fourth. So you say 26 and 28 cancelled each other out. The future fourths cancelled each other out. So they got Ben Brown for pick 33, really, that in the end. And he goes from the bottom team to being a premiership key forward. So
love it.
Matty Lloyd's top five steals of the 2020 trade period, the early trade with Kane Corns and Matthew Lloyd on Continental Tires AFL Trade Radio, taking you through the highlights of the day from each of the shows across Trade Radio. And you can give your view 1300 23 55 48 on the Kogan Mobile Open Line, or you can text 0419 187 323. Marty Pass spoke to the boys as well, player manager, about an issue that's been on the table for a lot of the year, and that's about, are we going to get to the point where we trade players against their will or without needing their consent? We'll do that on the other side of this on Trade Evenings. The Kogan Mobile Open Line, always open, 1300 736 736. Trade Evenings, where we look back on the major discussion points all across today of Trade Radio. And there is so much content to work our way through, but it isn't complete without you getting involved. 1300 23 55 48 is the number for this hour. Joe's in Roeville. G'day, Joe.
G'day, Sammy. How you going?
Very well, thanks, my friend. What's happening?
Same old, mate. Just working hard, making a living, and that's about it, mate. Just seeing what the Hawks are going to do. What do you think about with Mitchell? I mean, do you think if they offload him, right, do you think that it could progress and Warple's, like, give him a bit more responsibility? Because remember the breakout year that Warple actually had when Mitchell was out for that year? He won the BNF. So
yep.
Do you think if they did do that and they bring in another young kid or a couple of extra draft picks, whatever, boost Warple up and give him a bit more responsibility. What do you think about that, Sammy?
I think those are the moves that Hawthorn have to make. If they've talked about wanting to increase their draft hand over the next couple of years and rebuild through the draft. So they've got pick 5 and pick 21 and pick 24. So you know what Melbourne have shown us about how to rebuild using first round draft picks is, you know, at the moment, given they're the reigning premiers, that's the blueprint. So Hawthorn did it once before. In the early 2000s through to the mids to get themselves ready for 08, which was in a grand final ahead of time, a premiership ahead of time. And then it set them up for the three-peat as well from what they did at draft and then what they did bringing in the players from other clubs that they needed. But they did the foundation of it through the draft. At the moment, our foundation are players that we've brought in from other clubs who are our most notable players. So the ones that have currency, if you are going to increase your trade hand, well, who better to do that with than a Brownlow medalist? And Tom Mitchell was seventh in this year's Brownlow. He was best and fairest this year, so he's had a great year. But he's 28 years of age, so he's still got 4 or 5 really good years of footy. So maybe if we're contending again in 5 years, not the 2 that Jeff Kennett thinks, I'm more realistic as a Hawks man to think that it's probably more like 5 years. Would he be a factor in that at the age of 32? And who knows what could happen in the meantime? Age is just a number. He's proven himself to be able to come back from long-term injury before. But you're right, Warple had a career-best year that year, and he won our best and fairest. Tom Mitchell's a very, very good player. And there's a few people that have even argued with me when I said I don't think Richmond would give pick 7 because that was an idea floated earlier, saying that he is worth, as a Brownlow medalist, he is worth pick 7. The decision has to be made, especially in a draft year where the Victorian kids have had probably 2 years without regular footy. 60% of the draft comes, 60% of the draftees still come from Victoria. So you've got to ask yourself at pick 7 for Richmond, if they were to have that, I suppose, choice or have that situation put to them, they would have to answer the question, is Tom Mitchell better than the player that we could get at pick 7 in a compromised draft, which this is because the Victorian kids have barely played in the last 2 years. So that would be a question for Richmond to answer, whether they'd be willing to give up pick 7 for Tom Mitchell. But he is someone that's locked straight in. They still believe they're in a premiership window. And Trent Cotchin, obviously stepping down from the captaincy, his midfield role has changed. But they certainly do lack a bit of depth in the middle at the moment, Richmond. And Dusty Martin's got a long way to recovery. I mean, he's expected to be ready for round 1, but he's got a lot of weight he's got to put back on, and he's got a long journey of recovery ahead. So that could be a really nice fit. It's just a matter of whether Richmond would be willing to give up pick 7 for him. But in answer to your question, I think it's a trade that they absolutely have to look at. We've seen now by successful era clubs, and Hawthorn have got their own blueprint for this. They've got their own history that says that we built through the draft and then topped up with players from other team to put the finishing touches on. And at the moment, their list just doesn't resemble that. And you've got a president thinking they're going to be back playing finals in 2 years. It just doesn't. None of that adds up. None of that stacks up. So thanks for the call, though, Joe. I really appreciate it. 1300 2355 48. So Marty Pask was asked the question on the early trade today, player manager, about players being traded against their will.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate. And look, to be honest, I don't know 100% where I sit with it sitting here right now, because I can see from the argument from club land, and then I can certainly see the argument from player. And then there's obviously the middle. And the middle ground are situations where you need to look into it a little bit further, in the sense that, yes, American sports look good, but remember that minimum contracts in America are north of $1 million. So to pick up a bloke and just plonk him somewhere overnight and he's sitting on $1 million and he's got the lifestyle and the ability to support that is a hell of a lot different than potentially a guy on $120,000 and $4,000 a game. So there's different complexities that go into it. Yes, the top end of the market, and I think everybody looks at the top end of the market where someone's on $800,000 and they can move and they should be okay. They can rent a house. They can adjust and manage. But that's not everybody in the competition. Whereas in the American sports, everybody's the minimum wages are enormous salaries, and they can adjust it and they can basically survive and be able to do it. So I worry about that bottom end in the sense of the financial impact of what it has and families. And a lot of the time too, a lot of these guys, they have two working people in their family. So they have a wife or a girlfriend that works to be able to, you know, sustain that income. So not everyone's on the big money like they are in these American sports, which is the example that you mentioned and everyone mentioned. So that's one argument that I think that people probably need to explore a little bit further and how that impacts. But then the other side of the argument too is, you mentioned the Ryan Burton situation just before. So clubs do have the opportunity to trade a player even though he's contracted as well. So those conversations do happen. And I already probably have heard six or seven on your show already where these guys are contracted or have a year to run on their contract. So clubs now are having these mature conversations with players anyway. So very rarely do you get a situation where a club says, hey, explore your options, even though you've got a year to run on your contract, and then all of a sudden they come back to the footy club. Often you'll find that when a club says that to them and they've got a year to run on their contract, they tend to leave. So there is that power, in a sense, with the club anyway, where if you have a mature conversation and you want the desired outcome, whether it be I have to clear money in my salary cap, or you're not going to get opportunity, whatever it may be, those conversations do tend to take place anyway.
Marty Pask speaking to Kane Corns and Matty Lloyd on the early trade this morning on the Continental Tires AFL Trade Radio. Just before we take a quick break, there's a question that's come off the text. Would Luke Dunstan or Charlie Constable be a good pickup for the Swans to replace Hewitt Dawson and eventually an ageing Kennedy Patrick from Brisbane? Charlie Constable is one of Marty Pask's clients, and he gave us an update on him today.
The football club and Charlie and we've had a good dialogue all year around opportunity and the need for opportunity. There's obviously the door's not shut on Charlie to return to Geelong. They've obviously got a very open mind in terms of where he may sit in 12 months, 18 months down the track and with opportunity. But should an opportunity arise now, and it's a good one, and we're obviously kicking the tires a little bit in the marketplace at the moment, trying to find out where that sits, then obviously he'd look at it. But, I mean, from my point of view, I've been doing this a while, and the ability for him at the second-tier competition and what he does is nothing short of outstanding. And, you know, I'd like to look at him in the marketplace as somebody that is getting a player that they can rely on and count on. And to give him an opportunity, because he thoroughly deserves it. If you look at his numbers, and even when he's come into the AFL, he's performed. So I think we'll know more in the next couple of weeks, but we're very open-minded where he sits.
When we come back, Mitch Cleary, Nick Del Santo, Brendan Goddard, talk the Saints, Dean Kent, Jack Loney, Nick Del Santo on Steve Cornelio. Also, Mitch Cleary gives us which clubs will be the most active this trade period. Melbourne's 10 out-of-contract players, and Adam Cooney on Collingwood and what they do with Darcy Moore and Jordan Ngoi. And Steve Silvani and Matt Rendell discuss how Pat Lipinski can get to Collingwood after requesting that the Bulldogs trade him to the Pies today. That's still to come on Trade Evenings on Continental Tires AFL Trade Radio.
A trade news update for Beaumont Tiles.
Probably the biggest story today in terms of player movement has been Paddy Lipinski asking the Western Bulldogs to trade him to Collingwood. Lipinski was taken by the Dogs with pick 28 in the 2016 draft and has played 56 games for the club and is looking for more regular senior footy. Both clubs have offered him 3 years, and now it's a matter of how that deal gets done. Steve Silvani and Matt Rendell did discuss that a little earlier on today.
This is going to be a fun one to watch, not to mention that the background that last year these two clubs did the Treloar deal, and there might be a little bit of bad blood just floating around.
Payback, you reckon, Mitch?
Well, maybe. I think, given Lipinski and Kruger are going to end up at Collingwood, one of those will be through the pre-season draft. Yeah. I just think, given Collingwood need to stockpile these picks for Nick Daicos, the interesting one with Lipinski is the Dogs need their own points for Sam Darcy.
Well, they do. I mean, future picks, I think, are going to come into play here. So yeah. I don't think they're going to get anything in this year's national draft. But, probably future picks will come into play.
So future picks or pre-season draft is how the Lipinski deal gets done, according to Mitch Cleary, Steve Silvani, Matt Rendell on the late trade from 3 o'clock every day on Trade Radio. According to AFL Media as well, Mitch has written a story today with Nathan Schmuck and Riley Beveridge that Frio believes its second round pick 27 is a fair price for contracted Geelong defender and wing or slash wingman Jordan Clark. So he hasn't officially asked for a trade yet, but it's understood, according to this report, that both sides know that he wants to head back and join the Dockers. Geelong, who picked him with number 15 in the 2018 draft, want something between 8 and 27, which is in between Fremantle's two selections, 8 and 27 in return for him. The Cats don't have a first-round pick. They gave it to Geelong in last year's draft to get Max Holmes. They've got 30, 32, 34 and 52. And the Dockers had previously traded away their third and fourth picks, according to this story on the Fox Sports website, which is covering off on the AFL media report. So the Dogs have traded away their third and fourth round picks, making it harder to work out a deal and find that sweet spot. So that's one to keep an eye on. Trade mornings today, Nick Del Santo, Brendan Goddard. Nick Del Santo spoke about Steve Cornelio and what he should do with the captaincy and his playing future.
Because I think it's in the best interest for him, and I think it's in the best interest for the football club for him to hand that over. Now, that is a really difficult and confronting conversation. I think at the end of the day, your responsibility of a football club is to do what is best for the football club. I think as difficult as it is, individuals fit into that clearly, and the selflessness of it is him being captain at the moment, I don't think is the best thing for the football club. I think it is better for him to hand that over. It might, you know what, it might even get to the point where the best thing for him is not to be at that footy club. Is he going to break back into that midfield? That's why I've got him on the intrigue list. Now, will he go? I don't know. I don't know how they break that contract. You know, there's still 5 or 6 years, whatever it is, running on that contract for huge coin.
I know that other people have mentioned this, but that's a pretty big statement based on like the little information we know.
Which bit?
Well, he may not be at the footy club. And why shouldn't he be there? How can he not break into that midfield? I understand that it's reasonably strong, but we know what he's capable. Like, why can't he get back to that?
But it's not me telling you. This is Leon Cameron. This is the coaching staff that have made a conscious decision when he's come back from injury multiple times.
Clearly, the injuries have affected him. He's couldn't find.
Well, that's
continuity.
Why he can't break back into the midfield.
Well, he's got a whole preseason now to do that.
Who are you having? You having Cal Ward? I know he's a little bit old. Are you having Cal Ward or Cornelio starting midfield?
Cornelio fit. I'm going with Cornelio.
I'm having cement head. Callum Ward. Josh Kelly?
Yeah, no, he's in there with Cornelio.
Jacob Hopper?
Yep. Yeah, so those three, Cornelio.
Taranto?
Kelly's wing inside mid.
Taranto?
Yeah, so he's now playing as a hybrid.
But he's only playing as a hybrid forward when they out of necessity, because Finlayson wasn't there and Toby Green wasn't there, so he had to go there at different times. I think Tim Taranto is a midfielder that can go forward and pinch it when he has to. Young Tom Green?
No, Taranto's in front of him.
Don't know about that. I think they want to develop young Tom Green. We've seen the size of his body.
The problem that GWS had, in my opinion, particularly early in the years, are all too much like for like. So they had Taranto, they had Hopper, they had Green, they had Ward.
Mm.
Where's the balance in terms of what they offer? They're all offering the same things.
Let me throw one other name into it, and they have something that few other clubs have, and they use it. Matt DeBoer. They have a tagger that they like to deploy and minimise, which I actually really like. Yep. I've got no issue with that. I actually like the idea that you're in an opposition report and you're analysing the team you're about to play, and you think to yourself, hang on, we've got a guy that can stop the opposition.
Nick Del Santo and Brendan Goddard, great discussion, and the boys are going to have a fair few of them. Look for those two to really butt heads at times. The former St Kilda teammates have known each other for a long time. They see footy just that little bit differently, and it makes for great listening 9 a.m. to 12 every day on Trade Radio for Continental Tyres. Just before we come back with a little bit more, Mitch Cleary, who discussed Melbourne's 10 out-of-contract players. This was him on the Trade Exchange with he and Riley Beveridge talking about which clubs they believe will be the most active in this trade period.
Man, Jack Dawe is a really interesting... Well, Carlton jumps straight at the front of that queue, given they've got Chera, Hewitt, Petrovsky, Seaton to work through. Fremantle is an interesting one as well. So Adam Chera, obviously, a lot to work through on that one when the trade period opens as of next Monday. But just that look for a key forward. What do they do in that space? What do they do with their picks? Do they try and move up the draft order to really attack the WA kids in the draft? And also, what do they do with the money that Chera left behind? We spoke about it yesterday briefly, but $750, around about $1,000 a season. They offered Chera to stay at the footy club. It was a two-year deal if he wanted it. It was a four-year deal if he wanted it. Freo were desperate for him to stay. What do they do with that money now? Do they spread it on a few others? Do they front-end a few other contracts? Do they go to Caleb Sarong or these sorts of guys and say, all right, here's a longer-term contract with that money left over? I'm really keen to see what Freo do. The other one is Sydney as well, with George Hewitt, as we mentioned. They won't have to do much there. I think they'll get probably an end of second or third round pick for George Hewitt and Jordan Dawson as well in that deal with the Crows.
Sarong currently contracted till 2023.
Yeah.
So they've got no immediate concerns over him. He's got two more years left in his contract. But
yeah, not saying he's leaving.
It would be the perfect opportunity for them to extend him for another two, potentially, if they have got money in the cap and go from there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I see the same with North Melbourne. You know, Taran Thomas, Cam Zerha, Jai Simpkin, go to these guys and offer them 4 or 5 year deals because you've got the money now to spend. You may as well lock these guys away for the future. That's more what I mean for Freo. I've got no indication that Caleb Sarong is looking elsewhere. I think he's well and truly embedded at the Dockers, but these are some of the things that clubs can do when they've got money to spend.
Mitch Cleary, Riley Beveridge, the Trade Exchange, 12 p.m. every day on Continental Tires AFL Trade Radio. Which clubs they expect to be the most active? When we come back, Mitch Cleary is going to discuss Melbourne's 10 out of contract players. Sam Edman and Adam Cooney will talk about what Collingwood should do with Darcy Moore and Jordan DeGoey. It was Mitch Cleary that put the new expression on the table: pre-agent, for what you do with players who are coming out of contract in a year. Do you trade them ahead of time to get maximum value? So we'll continue that discussion very shortly. Just a couple off the text. Mason Cox to Brisbane is big. The last report we have on that particular scenario is that Brisbane are looking at some tall options. One of those is Mason Cox. The other, Levi Casbolt and Darcy Fort. Big fella off the text, which is 0419 187 323 on the Kogan Mobile open line, says, there has been a discussion with Brisbane RE. Gunston Sam, our salary cap is tight, so I can't see it happening, but his name has popped up. Cheers from Big Fella. And how about a deal, Jackson to Freo for Chera and pick 8, which the Demons can use to their NGA top 10 prospect player in Mac Andrews? That's from AG. So a bit of thinking going into that. I just can't see a world where Melbourne now trade Luke Jackson. From every expert you hear, Gary Lyon being at the forefront of that, says that it was Luke Jackson going into the ruck where Max Gawn letting him stay in the ruck that actually turned the grand final on its head. They were 19 points down when he went into the ruck, and then they got those clearances, bang, bang, Petrarca goals. They kept Luke Jackson in there, and he changed the course of the game, and he's a unicorn as a player. I mean, he might end up being the best ruckman in the competition. He's got elements of all the three best in him at the moment. So I can't see a world where they give up Luke Jackson for anybody at the moment. But keep sending the ideas through. It certainly wouldn't be a straight swap. They'd need to get a lot back, Melbourne, if they were going to entertain that. And I don't think they will. I think the premiership medal around his neck means that, yeah, he is absolutely untouchable. Back after this on Trade Evenings.
A trade news update for Mate Internet and Mobile. Mate, award-winning Aussie service. Mobile plans from $20.
Before we finish up today on the Trade Exchange from 12 p.m, Mitch Cleary, Riley Beveridge on Continental Tires AFL Trade Radio talked about Melbourne. Now, obviously, the premiers have 10 out of contract players.
Man, Jack Dawe is a really interesting one. He was brought in on the eve of the season. Cal's made this point a few times. Who would have thought they'd win the premiership, Melbourne, when they went and got Man, Jack Dawe to play as a backup forward option in the preseason? Ben Brown was injured.
Sam Wiedemann was injured.
Sam Wiedemann and Tom McDonald was back at the footy club having tail between his legs, really. Tried to look for a new home this time last year with 2 years left on good money and was unable to find a deal. Fast forward to this year, Riles, and Tom McDonald's extended his contract for 2 more years. I think part of that, in all honesty, was to smooth some of his money out that was owing in 2022. But their forward line is looking as sharp as ever right now. So what happens with Majak, I think there's still a chance he stays on the list next year, but it's more as a backup ruckman. He played most of the time in the VFL as a backup ruckman. We know Gorn and Jackson are there. They're not going anywhere. But the Demons had a look last year for a backup ruckman. They met with Andrew Phillips at Essendon. We spoke about it on this show. Could he become a four-time, four-club player? Andrew Phillips, that didn't eventuate. He's still at Essendon and has subsequently re-signed. But I think there's an opportunity for Majak to stay now at Melbourne as a backup ruckman and offer a bit of depth there behind Gorn and Jackson if one of those guys go down. Austin Brakey, as you said, has been delisted as well. So there's not too much in the ruck department. That's where Majak could fit in. As for Mitch Brown, he's one of those guys that probably has to wait until the end of trade period, like he's probably faced three or four times in his career, unfortunately. A good sign for him that he wasn't part of the initial delistings, but still no certainty on his future. I've got them with 10 players out of contract right now. So Oscar Baker, I think, will get a one-year deal, most likely. Toby Bedford is another out of contract. Cade Chandler, he's a rookie. I think he was emergency for the grand final.
They liked him. He was a sub a couple of times early in the year. They like his run, his energy that he provides. So I wouldn't be surprised if he got another year.
Yep. Majak, as we mentioned, Mitch Brown. Kaida Klaas picked up in the mid-season rookie draft on a one-year deal. Not sure where that one's going to fall. Michael Hibberd, I expect to get a one-year extension. Marty Hoare is a watch, given his ACL this year. They love him, the clubman. Nature, his side of things. He worked with Casey this year in the VFL. Mm-hmm. He's as good a professional as you'll see, Marty Hoare, but where does he fit in? Maybe the Adam Tomlinson injury might open the door for him to get a one-year deal, given his ACL was in preseason.
Yep.
Tomlinson's not going to be back until the middle parts of next year.
If the season had been 8 weeks longer, Marty Hoare probably would have played footy this year. Like, he was very close towards the end of the season in his recovery.
Yeah.
So he's one that will probably get a full preseason under his belt should he remain at the club.
Yep. Deacon Smith, taken on as an SSP signing at the same time as Majak Dorr. Not sure where he falls. And then the other one is Daniel Turner, a rookie in the mid-season draft as well. You'd think, given his age as a 9-10-year-old, a bit more of a speculative pick. He came on a bit out of Albury. I would expect him to probably get a one-year extension as well.
There we go. They're looking in very good shape, aren't they, Melbourne? And you can see why people just get the whiff that they could be set for maybe a little dynasty run of their own. Sam Ebb and Adam Cooney on Trade Afternoons from 1 p.m. every day on Continental Tires AFL Trade Radio. Spoke about Collingwood and the idea around Darcy Moore and Jordan DeGoey. And would you look to get to trade them out before the end of their contracts, or should you be locking them in?
What Collingwood would look to do, assuming that both of them have bumper years next year, and the way Jordan DeGoey finished and as good as Darcy Moore was pre-injury, if they both have awesome years, where does that leave them, given that they've got Grundy on $1 million-plus a year long-term? These two could command more than $1 million. And have we ever had one club paying three players more than $1 million bucks a season? Given that would be what DeGoey would command if he had another a big season next year from a rival club.
This is why I floated the idea yesterday about trading one of them as a pre-agent, which you scoffed at.
No, we scoffed at the fact that the two first-round draft picks you wanted for DeGoey. And on current evidence, you would say that's
saying he's going to have $1 million year next
year.
No,
I'm saying if he does, as was speculated on the late trade yesterday, if they do, where does that leave Collingwood going forward? Because I think Darcy Moore's contract at the moment is worth around $850,000 a year.
Oh, yeah, nice. So I suppose the issue with that, if pick one, does that get eaten up for the Nick Dacos bid if they do trade?
If there's a bid on Nick Dacos at pick one.
From North.
Then Conley would have to match it, and they're about 700 points short of that.
Who's ahead, Horn Francis or Nick Dacos?
Yeah,
he's rocketed to.
Well, in North Melbourne's eyes, he's number one anyway, I think. But doesn't matter because Nick Dacos is going to the Pies.
So that was Sam Ebbin and Adam Cooney today. It's really interesting that Brody Grundy contract continues to maybe cause some problems. Craig Cameron, the Gold Coast list manager, spoke about Will Brody and Darcy McPherson today on Trade Afternoons with Mitch Cleary, Steve Silvani, and Matt Rendell.
Oh, so we've got a couple of players that are probably talking to us about needing opportunity to play, and we'll look to help them find clubs through the trade period. Then at the end of the trade period, we'll have a look at what our list's like. If we have to do some things to get players to the rookie list, then we'll do that. We've already had conversations with a couple of players and their managers around doing that. And that's why I think we'll have a minimum number of picks, to be honest, Mitch. It's a year where we think we don't want to turn the list over too much, and we want to keep just bringing elite top-end talent, but also just make sure that the guys that are on our list get to play enough games together.
Will Brody is one of those midfielders looking for more opportunities. He come to you, or where does that situation sit in terms of him looking for more game time? Darcy McPherson, take us through some of these kids.
Yeah, so Will's going into his sixth year next year, and he quite rightly wants to explore his options elsewhere. And we're happy to facilitate that if we can find something for him. And we'll work to that through the trade period. Darcy, a little bit the same, but he hasn't been quite as vehement in talking to us around wanting to find another home. But if he did and we found something that worked for us, then we'd look at that.
Reckon there'd be homes for both of those men, Will Brody and Darcy McPherson. Will Brody, a big-bodied mid, was picked 9 in the 2016 draft, and Darcy McPherson's played some really good footy for the Suns. Think like the Charlie Spargo role that he played at Melbourne this year. And Craig Cameron on Luke Dunstan, would they have a look at him?
I think we'll have to wait till we get through trade period to see where everything sits, Mitch. But Luke's a good player. He played some good games this season, so we'd be crazy not to look at a player of his talent if he's available on the rookie list. It just depends what happens through the trade period as to how many rookie selections we'll actually have.
Craig Cameron, list manager at the Suns. The news update for Mate Internet and Mobile, Australia's most satisfied NBN customers' internet from $59. And that's pretty much all we've got time for this evening on Trade Evenings for Continental Tires, AFL Trade Radio. And big thanks for all your calls and texts on the Kogan Mobile open line, which is 1300 23 55 48 for this hour every weekday during the trade period and the duration of AFL Trade Radio for the next 2.5 weeks, so don't forget to make the call and switch to Kogan Mobile today. The text line 0419 187 323. And for tomorrow, it all starts again at 7 a.m. with Kane Corns and Matty Lloyd for the early trade. And then from 9 a.m. trade mornings with Nick Dalsano and Brendan Goddard. The trade exchange with Riley Beveridge and Mitch Cleary. And then that's from 12 to 1. And then from 1 till 3, trade afternoons with Sam Edmund and Adam Cooney. The late trade with Mitch Cleary, Steve Silvani and Matt Rendell. And then you've got Cam Luke for an hour after that. Before you get me, and don't forget, follow it all on Twitter. Trade Radio on Twitter is just going absolutely gangbusters. And you can get all the podcasts there as well if you miss anything. The guys have got all the big agenda items on the table and they're looking for your suggestions too, so don't forget to get involved with them throughout the course of the day. Thanks for your company. For those sticking with me, the Sporting Capital will be back on the other side of this. Have a great night. Stay safe.